You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. It is time to talk Christmas movies with one of our favorite movie reviewers, the Reverend Chad Hoover. He's the Theology Department Chair and Director of Integrated Campus Ministry at Concordia Lutheran High School in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Pastor Hoover, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Good to spend some time with you as the students are winding down, getting ready for their Christmas break. And one of my favorite things to do over the Christmas vacation time is to watch Christmas movies. Does the Hoover family enjoy Christmas movies?
We do. And last year, actually, I think it was last year or the year before, we introduced them to A Christmas Story. And it was great. It's always fun to show them movies that we enjoyed when we were younger. And then kind of share those with our children. And it's a movie that just kind of stands the test of time.
Absolutely. This has become, The Christmas Story has become, I think, an all-time classic. It debuted in 1983. So this was, for me, that was elementary school. I think it was around third grade or so. And I'm certain we did not go out to the movie theater to see it. It probably wasn't until later, until it came out on VHS, I'm sure, that I saw it. But why? What were you doing about that? Did you ever see it in the movie theater, or did you wait till it came out?
I did not see it in the movie theater. No, actually, that's the weird thing is I don't remember the first time I ever saw the movie, but I do remember watching it when I was younger, and really thinking it was quite funny. I think maybe it was just reruns on television or something, even with commercial breaks. You know, it was probably
sure.
The first time I ever saw it, or maybe VHS. I really don't remember.
Why do you think this film has become a classic film? I mean, why has it become a long-standing favorite? I mean, we have it on DVD, and yes, we pull it out every year, even at other times of the year sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about this movie. It's got some enduring qualities to it as far as the characters in the movie are concerned. The family, Ralphie's family in the movie, the father is a typical father that, so many of us have had fathers that are just like that, that are very standoffish, very loud, boisterous, thinking they can fix anything. You know, I like the part where he's in the car and the tire blows. And he's like, "Time me 3 minutes," and he runs out to the car. He's gonna see. We all, if we didn't have a father like that, we know fathers like that. The mother too was, just a character that we can all relate to. The kids with the little brother who, never ate at the dinner table, and mom had to trick him into eating. And, even this takes place in northern Indiana. I grew up in Wisconsin, but the parts of the movie where they're dressing their kids for winter and they put so much clothing on that the younger brother that he can't even walk, he can't put his arms down, he's like waddling to school. There's so much about this movie that people can relate to that I think there's something in it for everybody. I mean, as far as everybody knows someone or something like the scenarios that are presented in the movie.
You're right. There is something that every person probably can identify with. For those of us who are older, we could probably identify with the school scenes. The little kid all bundled up to go out in the cold. Although, I don't know, this next generation with the way that technology designs, I mean, how many kids are bundled up in layers upon layers that are that big and bulky? I was just thinking about that when I watched it recently, seeing how, he was just bundled up in these giant layers. Now, winter coats aren't that big and bulky.
That's true. Yeah, they might not be able to relate to that, but
what,
so funny.
What's the overall premise of this story? I mean, give us your view of the story.
Spoiler alert, okay, a movie that came out in 1983. But yeah, I mean, the premise, it centers around Ralphie, who's, what, he's like 9 years old or something.
Uh-huh.
And he, it's Christmas time, and what he wants for Christmas is the Red Ryder 200-shot model air rifle, the BB gun. And the whole movie is him, in his own words from the narrator, is him scheming to get this gun for Christmas. And of course, everybody keeps telling him the same thing about the gun: you'll shoot your eye out. And so the whole movie is Ralphie kind of dreaming and fantasizing.
Oh,
there's an announcement. the whole movie is kind of this him dreaming about what it will be like to have this Red Ryder BB gun, and why he continues against all odds to want this, even though everybody keeps telling him it's a bad idea to have it. And so the movie centers around a lot of Christmas traditions and themes, you know, going to see Santa Claus, things like that, you know, Christmas dinners and the leg lamp, of course. Nobody has one of those except for now people buy them for jokes. But things like this, you know, where he's all of these other scenarios are kind of centered around this fact of Ralphie. He wants this very specific thing for Christmas, and he ultimately doesn't care about anything else.
Well, you're right. Not many people had a leg lamp prior to that movie, I'm sure. But I'm sure that the makers of leg lamps have profited since.
Yes. Or we had a neighbor when we lived up in Michigan who had like a window cling that they put in their front window at Christmas that was like the leg lamp. So and that's the thing too about this movie is so many people find that endearing. You know, like this leg lamp is just so funny that the father loves this leg lamp so much that their Christmas decorations now will reflect what they've seen in this movie and have leg lamps in their window, which is just meant to be funny.
I've even seen nightlights now that are like the leg lamp. There, you can find just about anything, all kinds of trinkets and all kinds of things associated with this movie today.
Yes.
You don't have any in your house, though, do you?
Just the DVD. That's it, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you pointed out that a little bit ago that this movie, you know, the story takes place in Indiana. So a lot of people from the Midwest can identify with it, even in the opening scene. It's a Christmas parade in Midwestern America in Indiana. And I remember as a kid going to Christmas parades. A lot of cities around here, a lot of small towns had Christmas parades. And that was one of the fun things around December was going to the Christmas parades and seeing all the floats and getting candy in the parade.
Yes.
Is that kind of a thing that's gone, you know, that's kind of gone away?
I'm not sure. Living here in Fort Wayne, this is my second Christmas here in Fort Wayne. I don't know if they have any Christmas parades around here or not, but I know, like you said, growing up as a child in Wisconsin, in Appleton, Wisconsin, where I grew up, there was a Christmas parade every year, and we went all the time. And in fact, being in Wisconsin, sometimes it was really, really, really cold.
Yeah.
And yet we still went, and it was at night, which the movie, the parade at night also. So that's so you can have all the Christmas lights on the floats and things like that. And, despite the cold, people would still be out downtown going to the Christmas parade and celebrating together as a community, which, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. They, you know, they probably don't have Christmas parades like that a whole lot anymore.
Perhaps it's because of our move toward a more, pluralistic view of winter holidays.
Perhaps that's true, or perhaps too, you know, people at this time of year have become so busy that they don't take time to do the things that we used to do in our culture. Even Christmas pageants, to some degree, I think, have kind of gone by the wayside. You know, those aren't really as popular as they used to be. Or if a church or a school does have a Christmas pageant or a Christmas play, sometimes it might be optional or, you know, it's not something like everybody's doing it or everybody in the community is taking part. So some of those cultural things that are associated with Christmas that we would see in this movie aren't things that we really do anymore in this day and age.
In fact, if I remember correctly, the Christmas tree is not up in their house. It's not up in the living room until Christmas, if I remember correctly. I don't remember seeing it in the house until closer to Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, I just actually watched the movie this morning to review for this. And there is a scene early in the movie where they're buying the Christmas tree, but then it doesn't really appear in the house until much later. So that's interesting.
Which, yeah. You know, thinking about like my parents' generation, the Christmas tree didn't go up until Christmas, or at least closer to Christmas. I mean, we have them up Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving now.
Yes, that's true. Usually, even in the stores, if you look at the stores around Halloween time, they're moving the Halloween things out, and the Christmas things are coming on the shelves sometimes even before Halloween. It's a big deal. And that's kind of the interesting thing, too. Watching this movie today, and one of the lines that I really picked up on was Ralphie in the very beginning narration, the adult Ralphie, is talking about how Christmas is like the entire kid year revolves around Christmas. Like that's the peak of the year. Everything is pointing to Christmas, and almost like as soon as Christmas is over, you think about, well, what about next year? You know, and how different that is, or how similar that is to our culture today, but how different that is compared to the church year.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the church year, we don't see Christmas as being the center of the church year, the thing that really drives the church year. We actually see Holy Week as being what drives the church year and what is the focal point of everything that we do in the church. Christmas is important, mm-hmm. and it's a great thing for us to celebrate in the church and even as a culture, even though some of the things that we celebrate in Christmas are pretty secular as far as not having anything to do with Christ's birth and the nativity of our Lord. But really the focal point of the church year is Christ's death and resurrection. And that's really what everything is driving to and revolves around.
It you're right. You know, from a kid's point of view, Christmas is all about the... For many kids, Christmas is all about the gifts. It's all about the,
right.
It all revolves, the whole year is about what are you going to get for Christmas? I don't know if it still right. is today, maybe, maybe not.
I mean, to some extent, I think, you know, to some extent, yes, because Christmas is a time where people are still getting some pretty, you know, gifts that they wouldn't normally get. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Christmas is really a profitable time of year for businesses because they're selling merchandise like they don't sell all throughout the year because people mm-hmm. are buying all of these gifts for everybody. And it has become, because our culture is driving Christmas as far as making it kind of the focal point of our society and everything that we do throughout the year is kind of driving us towards Christmas, that becomes the most important thing in as far as holidays. It's the biggest holiday. Whereas really, if we do think about the from a Christian perspective or from the perspective of the church, without Good Friday and without Easter, Christmas would really have very little meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't matter that Christ came, that God's Son came in the flesh, if he didn't go to the cross and if he didn't rise from the dead to defeat sin, death, and the devil for us, then his coming in the flesh would be kind of like a big, well, so what? You know, what's the point in that? So you look at Jesus' ministry, he did a lot of things. He did a lot of preaching. That was good. He did a lot of healing, and that was great. But those things were not the main focus of his ministry. The main focus of his ministry mm-hmm. was to go to the cross, and he's continually, throughout his ministry, you know, unveiling this plan of God and reminding his disciples, this is what I'm here to do. This is why I have come. I have come so that I can go to Jerusalem and be crucified and so that after 3 days I would rise again. This is the whole point of his ministry. All along the way, he's teaching and preaching and doing healings and miracles and things like that, proving to people that he is God in the flesh. But ultimately, those things were serving a purpose to bring people to faith and to an understanding of who Jesus is so that when he goes to the cross, they would look at him and say, this is his purpose. This is why he came. This is God's plan for salvation, not just that he was born, but ultimately that he would die and that he would be resurrected.
So the main part of the church here is, as you said, Holy Week. So Christmas is, well, it would mean nothing without that death and resurrection of Jesus. Good point.
Right.
Good point.
And a lot of people, too, and the interesting thing about it, too, is we do have this season of Advent, which kind of prepares us for Christmas. Mm-hmm. It prepares us for the coming Christ, and it helps us to see that, you know, Christ came as a baby, a long time ago, and that Christ continues to come even today and serve us, his church, and give us faith through his Holy Spirit to bring us into communion with him. And then also it reminds us that Christ is coming again, that he will return to take us all home to be with him. And so there's a preparation there in Advent that helps prepare our hearts and our minds for the celebration of Christmas and reminds us why that's so important. Again, pointing us to what this man will do on the cross and through his resurrection. Hmm. So it's preparing us for that, and it's not just about the giving of gifts or even saying, happy birthday, Jesus. You know, a lot of people will make a big deal about it being Jesus' birthday and have birthday cakes for Jesus. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not the whole point. It's just Jesus' birthday, like it's our birthday. Yay, I'm celebrating another year of living. That's not what is significant about this celebration of Christmas, because as we know, December 25th is not Jesus' birthday. It's just the church's recognition of his coming and his birth and all of the stories in the Bible that surround around that go around that story. But it's a celebration that's much greater than just his birthday.
You know, one thing I find interesting about the story, about the movie, is that they don't really make any reference to Christmas services or anything like that. In that time, you know, in that era, that I think that would have been likely that families would have attended
probably
a Christmas service.
There was one, and I was kind of listening for that today, too. There was one song at the beginning of the movie that was just kind of being played in the background, and I can't even remember which hymn it was, but it was a hymn, mm-hmm. you know, and it was talking about the birth of the Savior, but that was about it. So, and that's typical of Christmas movies. I mean, we don't expect them to all be, you know, Charlie Brown's Christmas special, where somebody gets up in the end and says, I'll tell you about the true meaning of Christmas, Charlie Brown, and then tells us the story of Luke 2. You know, we don't have that in a lot of movies, and we shouldn't really expect that we will. But it's typical of our culture even today, where Christmas has become a very, you know, secular sort of celebration. You know, even on the radio, listening to Christmas music, every now and then you'll get a Christmas song that talks about the birth of the Savior, or the birth of Christ, or the celebration of the Lord's coming or something. But for the most part, you've got just the happy Christmassy type wintry song. And then even I heard one radio ad, you know, what is the true meaning of Christmas? And then they interviewed like Man on the Street, and they're like, oh, Christmas is the time to get together with family. Christmas is a time for joy, and Christmas is a time to be at peace with one another. I'm like, wow, that's all true, but Christmas is also primarily the time when we celebrate the fact that God has come in the flesh to be our Savior. You know, that's the real focus of Christmas, and we don't see that a lot in our mm-hmm. culture.
Earlier you mentioned one of the reasons that this film has become a classic is because many people could identify with one of the characters, at least one of the characters in the film.
Yes.
Okay, who's the character you identify with?
I got another announcement coming over. We're not supposed to be making announcements. People are taking finals in this building, and now they're making announcements.
That's okay.
Yeah. What character can I... Well, you know, as a child, I probably did, because of my age at the time that I first saw it, really kind of related to Ralphie. You mm-hmm. know, I was a boy. I had a younger brother like Ralphie did. I also had an older brother, which Ralphie doesn't have, but I had the younger brother like Ralphie, and I think I could relate to a lot of the things in the family, you know, that Ralphie was doing, or even some of the interactions that he had with some of his friends, some of the peer pressure that he experiences, where Ralphie's not really a bad kid, but he kind of gets mixed up in the wrong crowd every now and then and makes some poor decisions, like telling that poor boy to stick his tongue to the flagpole, or even the part where he's just had enough of the bully, and he just attacks the bully and just starts hitting him and mm-hmm. and just loses it. You know, these are things that as a kid I can relate to, because I was much the same way. As an adult, I actually can see myself relating to Ralphie's father a little bit, because I see, you know, the joy that this father gets. I mean, he's ultimately the one, spoiler alert, who gets Ralphie the Red Ryder BB gun in the end of the movie. He is ultimately the one who wants his boy to have that. And even though throughout the movie he's kind of You know, he's singularly focused on certain things like the leg lamp or, you know, the Christmas dinner or the fixing the furnace or changing the car tire. He ultimately does show that he loves his family. He cares for his family. He wants to provide for his family. And ultimately, too, in the end of the movie, that becomes one of the predominant themes, because the movie does come to a conclusion of Ralphie gets the Red Ryder BB gun. He does, spoiler alert, almost shoot his eye out. but that's it. You know, once he gets it, that Red Ryder is put aside, and what happens at the end of the movie is what the narrator says is the most important thing that he remembered from that Christmas, is the dogs had come in from outside and eaten the turkey that was on the table, and they all had to go to a Chinese restaurant for Thanksgiving, and they had a great time together because it had taken them out of their ordinary routine, and it had put them in the situation where they all just laughed and had a great time together at this Chinese restaurant that they were the only ones there, you know, on Christmas Day, enjoying this Chinese roasted duck that had its head chopped off in the end of the movie. And the narrator says this was something that they would never forget. This was something they would always remember, that Christmas when they went to a Chinese restaurant. So in the end, it wasn't even the Red Ryder BB gun. It was the family. And it was the time spent with the family and the laughter that they had together. And so, I mean, it's a good message. It's still not Christ, but it's a good message. You know?
Right. It was the Christmas that would always be remembered as the one where they were introduced to Chinese turkey, I think, is what he's... Doesn't he say that?
Oh, was it yeah.
Well, it was duck.
Wasn't it duck?
It was duck, but he's... Oh. I thought he... Maybe I'm misremembering, confusing it with something else, but I thought he said it would be the one they were first introduced to Chinese turkey.
Yeah, there is something to that effect, the last few lines of the movie. That was the big thing that he remembered.
Yeah.
As an adult, it wasn't so much the BB gun; it was the time with his family.
And you make a really good point that perhaps that's what we like about this movie, is the hidden moral message, the moral lesson, and that is that taking care of family is more important than the leg lamp or all the furnace that doesn't work properly, our speed on changing a car tire or anything else that we want to do to impress people.
Right.
that caring for our family, the family that we've been given, especially as parents, caring for children, the there's certainly a moral lesson, I think, that happens there. And we can appreciate that. You're right. That's not what Christmas is solely about, but that's what I think makes the movie enjoyable, and that's why we feel good about watching the movie.
Yeah, it does have that ending where, he gets the Red Ryder BB gun, but that's ultimately not the most important thing in the end, mm-hmm. and Ralphie kind of realizes that too. So there's it's got to have some greater resolution in order to make it a good film, you know. If it were just the Red Ryder BB gun, you know, if the movie would have ended, Ralphie goes out in the backyard and shooting his Red Ryder BB gun, and the credits roll, okay, he got it. But I mean, I think it was clever that the movie did end with something a little bit more substance than just getting a BB gun for Christmas.
If you were to show it with just about a minute or so to cover this, if you were to show this film to your students, I don't know if you would or wouldn't, but if you were to show this film to your students, what would you talk about with your students about in this movie?
Well, I would go onto the archives and just play them this this interview. And no, actually, the one thing that you could talk about is you could talk about parent-children relationships. I mean, there's a couple of times in this movie where Ralphie is disciplined by his parents, and rightly so. Times where, you know, he's changing the car tire with his dad, and he lets an inappropriate word slip. And what I love about the movie is it says fudge, but he didn't say fudge. And there's discipline there, and there's showing of that. There's also this idea of kind of discontent with the things that he already had that maybe he didn't realize were blessings.
Mm-hmm.
As far as he's coveting for this Red Ryder BB gun the whole movie. And then even his father on Christmas morning, you know, he's opening all of his presents and he looks around and he goes, "Well, I didn't get a tie this year." You know, it's like and that's just sinful human nature, is we are just not content with the things that we have that God has given us. So there would be a lot of things that we could talk about there too. And, you know, there's ideas of peer pressure and things like that. And, you know, our sinful nature being tempted to do things that, you know, would not be pleasing to God. You could talk about all sorts of things like that.
The real question is, would you break out the bunny pajamas in order to show the movie?
If I had some, I would. Yeah.
Well, we are all out of time, but two pieces of trivia for you before we wrap up. Did you know there is a sequel to the movie?
Yes, unfortunately.
I did not. I've not seen it. Have you seen it?
No. No, it was straight to video, and it was made like a couple of years ago.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's pretty recent. Actually, I think there was another sequel, too, that didn't star any of the original cast as well.
Right.
And I can't remember the name of that one. But then there's one just called A Christmas Story 2.
Oh,
which
this
is released straight to video.
This is called It Runs in the Family, My Summer Story. And so
yes.
I think it was written by Gene Shepherd as well.
Yes, that one is a sequel with the same characters, but none of the same actors.
Right, right.
And then there's one called A Christmas Story 2, which was straight to video, that was released just a couple of years ago.
I have not seen either.
I have not either.
Challenge accepted. Did you know there's also a musical by the same name now?
I did not know that.
Stage production. I got to see it last year. Took my nephews to see it. Pretty funny.
Huh.
Well, thank you, Pastor Hoover, for taking time to review this Christmas movie with us. And I pray that all goes well with finals for your students at Concordia Lutheran High School in Fort Wayne, and that you and your family have a very blessed Advent and Nativity Christmas this year.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. You too.
God's blessings. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
It's that season when our minds are centered on a young woman and her infant baby boy in a stable. It's the most iconic image for Christians around the world when contemplating Christmas. Our friends at Americans United for Life have hit on that theme with new legislation aimed at protecting both mother and child from abortion. AUL is known as the architect of pro-life legislation, and they've announced their Infants Protection Project. These laws require babies' bodies be treated with dignity and respect and can't be sold, prohibit sex selection abortions or those done on babies with Down syndrome. Another requires appropriate medical care for babies who survive abortion. God sent his son to save people from the sin of abortion. May these laws also be part of God's plan.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. God gave his greatest gift to us that first Christmas day. May the wonder of it always guide and light your way. Merry Christmas from our family at Lutheran Senior Services to yours. Lutheran Senior Services, lssliving.org.
Ad Crucem offers theologically sound, scripturally rich, and high-quality items for nearly every occasion. They have exquisite greeting cards, handcrafted jewelry, fine art, crucifixes, church certificates, banners, and much more. AdCrucem.com has amazing products at great prices. That's AdCrucem.com. Greeting cards and gifts designed and made in the USA. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation.
Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through white and drifted snow. Over the river and through the woods, oh how the wind does blow. It
stings the toes and bites the nose as over the ground we go.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Wednesday, November 20th, and we are having a great time talking about preparing for the holidays, and even things are starting to look a little more holiday-rific around here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod International Center. But, you know, what the holidays brings, quite an interesting topic, visiting relatives and traveling, and we're bringing back one of our expert moms, Jackie Meyer from Churubusco, Indiana. Why are you laughing at that?
I just think it's funny. I mean, I guess I am an expert mom at this point. I mean, when you mother for 10 years straight, almost 11 now without stopping, I suppose that makes you an expert in your field. But
there's no stopping. Well, Jackie, you've been on before talking about a variety of topics when it comes to children homeschooling, and you were on our first Moms Roundtable today. And during those conversations, I thought, man, and following you on Facebook and your blog, we've got to get some ideas from her on how to travel with children, how to make it through. And Amanda and I were talking before the show, and she's like, that just doesn't work for us. We just don't travel.
Right. We don't travel very often, but we traveled a lot this year. So in the same 2-week period, which made it even crazier. But
I remember reading about your preparations. It was meticulous.
It was very pointed and very intentional, I'll tell you that, because I figured when we were traveling, we went on an all Meyer family vacation in September, where my husband's entire family, we all get together every other year and go on vacation somewhere. And this was about a four and a half hour trip up to Michigan. And then a week after we came home from that, actually less than that, about 5 days after we came home from that, we headed down just our immediate family to Orlando to Disney World. So we had, that was about a 15-hour drive when you added stops in on the way down and the weather and all that. It was 19 hours, but
you should see the look of fear in Amanda's eyes.
By fire.
You should see the look of fear in Amanda's eyes when you said 15-hour drive with your family. Now, how many children in the Meyer household?
Well, we have four. We have four girls. We took all four of them to Michigan with us, but we only took three to Disney. We left our 2-year-old at home because we didn't know how she would do with traveling and how she would do down there. And we figured she would just, you know, make us miserable and we'd make her miserable. And we thought, you know what, let's just leave her at home with grandma, which we had to bring her down off of grandma detox after we got home. But it really was a good decision, and it made everybody's trip go very smoothly.
Now, you bring up a good point, grandma detox. I think that's going to be our topic of discussion around, say, January 2nd.
It's one of those things, but it's a blessing and a curse. So it's it all went really well, and I just figured it was my job in the house just to prepare everyone and to keep everyone occupied during our trip. So I did a whole lot of research and read a whole lot of blog posts and lists and things like that, and just made some good decisions on what I thought was best for.
See, that's the teacher in you, doing all the research beforehand and all the preparations.
I know. I just figure being prepared gives me the best chance of everyone keeping their seats. So that's the most important thing, especially when you're all crammed into a vehicle and driving so many hours.
Absolutely. So how early, how far out before the trip did you start working with the kids? What did you start doing, and how far in advance did
you
do that?
We didn't tell our kids. They knew we were going on our Michigan trip, but we didn't tell our kids we were going to Disney until a couple weeks before we left, just because we didn't want all the, how soon is it going to be, and that kind of thing. But
I wouldn't tell them until the day we got in the car.
Well, I wanted them to be prepared for the drive, you know? So I thought they really need to be prepared to drive 15 hours in the van, you know, to be sitting buckled in, we're not getting out, you know, that kind of thing. I wanted them to be prepared. And that's one of my big things I would say is to be overly prepared. You have to be very patient. You have to be very flexible with your rules. You know, there are going to be intense moments with traffic or traffic jams or weather. I mean, it rained on us on our way to Disney for 8 hours of our trip, and it was miserable to drive. And I mean, it was pouring at some points, and I could hardly see the road at some points, and I mean, it was just nuts. So it was very intense, but you know, we had planned well, and you know, those kinds of things are unavoidable, so we needed to just make the best of them while we were in the van.
And when you say rules, and the rules need to be flexible, you mean the rules for parents, right?
Oh yes, absolutely. But just being flexible, you know, we don't typically let our kids eat snacks and treats whenever they want. But on a long trip like that, we just stuffed them in their bags and we said, this is what you get. You know, you might want to ration that out throughout the day, but if you want to sit there and eat, you know, six Starbursts, go for it. You know, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, we don't usually parent in the whatever makes you happy kind of a method, but it, for traveling, if you want to drink your whole water bottle now or you want to eat your whole bag of popcorn right now, go for it, because you know, that's where you have to be, I think, when you're traveling that far.
To be flexible and accommodating for them. Now, yes, with snacks and everything at all places all over the time, does that mean more frequent bathroom breaks? Or how do you plan for breaks?
Well, we knew we would have to stop for gas. Anytime that you take breaks, we make everybody go to the bathroom. And I am not above paying people for going to the bathroom. We take orders. I say you go to the bathroom, you try to go to the bathroom, you get a quarter. You go to the bathroom, you get two quarters. You know, I mean, it's you want them to go. And I mean, my older kids all know, yes, we're going to go to the bathroom. You know, my five-year-old, it's a little more bribery going on. Again, for traveling, that's what we do. I want them to go. I don't want to have to stop in a half an hour from now. You know, we make them stop. For us, we just tried to get as far as we could every time. And you know, when you stop to have lunch somewhere, we're having kids doing cartwheels out in the grass, running around trees, all kinds of things like that. I mean, you want them to move and get that energy out.
Oh, so when other people are traveling around you, oh, there's the Meyer family.
Yes. When you did stop at this McDonald's, and seriously, this lady's like, oh, are you really getting some of that energy worn off, huh? And we're like, yep. You know, I mean, they knew exactly what we were doing, but good things for that, you know, pack some jump ropes, a couple jump ropes, maybe a ball or two. Beach balls are great because, you know, you can smush them down and stuff them in your glove box or whatever. But
and wear the kids out when you tell them they have to blow them up.
Yeah, there you go. That can be an activity in the van on the way to, you know, 5 minutes from where you're going. So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great advice. Bring a jump rope. I wouldn't have even thought of that, because it packs up nice and small. It doesn't take up a lot of space.
Frisbees, that kind of thing. Those are great. Like, they don't take up a lot of space at all, but you can just pull them right out real fast.
Sure. Yeah. A great way to stop. Now, with the holidays, you know, if you're not traveling in a warm climate, you might need to find something else, another way to get that activity out if it's cold outside. Just have them run around the car a couple of times, right?
Yeah, and even just, I mean, so many restaurants anymore have play places, and I actually read online somewhere, we're kind of behind the ages here, but we don't have iPhones and things like that, but I've heard that there are apps that actually tell you where restaurants are with play places in them and things like that, so you can easily find a spot like that if you're traveling.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Plan out your stops. I know that my sister has a teen and a preteen and travels during the summer. And I know that she's a teacher. What is it with the teachers and the planning? She's a teacher as well and plans out all their stops as well when they travel during the summer, because she has the whole summer off and they camp all over the country. So she's pretty good about planning out those stops as well ahead of time. So having a plan beforehand is what I'm hearing you say.
Oh, yeah.
Giving the kids enough notice so they can start thinking about what it means to be sitting in a car for 15 hours or 8 hours at a time, whatever it might be. Other points?
For just trying to make the trip go a little faster and not have all of these, are we there yet? Are we there yet? We printed out a piece of paper that had the numbers 1 through 20 on it, basically. And we had our little Mickey Mouse ears on number 15, so they knew when we left there, 15 hours left to drive. And every hour that we would drive, we would move that back. And so they could tell how many hours more, you know, it was until we would get to our destination. So that was a really great visual for them, because it's hard to say, oh, it's 10 more hours. You know, they don't really necessarily get that. That's a big number when you're talking time. So that was a great visual that they could see how much closer we were getting every hour. And we did the same thing on the way home. So that was really well, worked really well for us.
So traveling to visit relatives over the holidays, you could put a picture of grandma and grandpa or somebody else on there at that, you know, on the hour that you should be arriving.
Absolutely. Totally. And you could even put, you know, like a little McDonald's sticker or a little food sticker, something, you know, something where they would even know after we drive 3 hours, we're going to stop and have lunch, you know, or after we, you know, we're going to stop for a snack here or whatever. But packing a supplies kit is a wonderful idea. I mean, we talked about snacks a couple minutes ago, but even with snacks, we always try to pack things that aren't crummy. So you don't want to pack a lot of crackers necessarily. I mean, you can, but you have the crumbs and things to
you're going to pay for
later.
It.
But like string cheese, grapes, bananas, pretzels, carrot sticks, granola bars, the tubes of yogurt, nothing that has to have a spoon. You know, you don't want anything with a spoon. But juice boxes tend not to work well, especially with younger kids because of the squeeze factor. We just do water bottles because even if water gets spilled, it dries. Mm-hmm. It's not sticky. It doesn't stink like milk or anything like that. Sippy cups, of course, seem to work best for the kind of the 4 and under crowd. The water bottles work better for the 5 and over crowd. But fed children tend to be happier children, so that's always a good way to go. But a supplies kit is a really great thing that we put together. We put wet wipes, paper towels, extra plastic bags, some Ziploc bags. Medications are really, I mean, you don't always think to put those in your, you know, up front with you. But Tylenol, Motrin, that kind of thing. Motion sickness medicine, we had to stop and pick some of that up because we didn't take any, and one of our kids got a little car sick. And so that was a blessing when we found that. Bandages, even a flashlight, small trash can in your vehicle would be a blessing as well. Taking a lightweight change of clothes for each child, and extra diapers if you have a child in diapers, more than you think you need. Clothespins can be really handy if your kids start a bag of something and then you need to clip it up. Cookie sheets are great for kids to play on, draw with, eat on, that kind of thing. And you can just wipe them down with a wet wipe if they're dirty or messy. If you have a toddler or child who is potty trained but might be a bit unpredictable when it comes to pottying, you might want to consider even packing your little small potty that they may be potty trained with and an extra roll of toilet paper just in case you have to stop along the side of the road, you know, on your way. That can be a blessing to not have to search for an actual business to find a bathroom.
Well, with just about a half a minute left, any other pointers for us, Jackie, as we're wrapping up our time?
I am just going to run through a couple of really good ideas to keep everyone occupied. Audiobooks are wonderful for the whole family. Colored pencils in lieu of crayons or markers, bring a sharpener with that. Coloring books, activity books. We encourage everyone to nap. It's the best way to pass time. And play I Spy, stickers and paper, magna doodles, and play the alphabet game, do pipe cleaners, make up stories and jokes. DVD players, of course, are wonderful. We get new movies from the library, borrow some from friends. Handheld gaming systems, Kindles, iPads, iPhones, all of those things. We also did a great incentive. We gave each of our kids a Ziploc bag that had $5 worth of quarters inside, and if they argued at all with a sibling, complained, had a bad attitude, anything like that, they had to pay us a quarter every time. They got to spend the money when we got to Disney. They added it to what we were giving them already for a souvenir, so that was definitely a bonus to them, and it worked like a charm. And I think we only took 2 quarters away on the way there.
Wow. I had to think about the crayons versus colored pencils thing for a little bit, and then I realized it probably has to do with the temperature in the car.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want one of those melting on your floor. Definitely not.
So. Or on the seat, even worse.
Yes.
Great points. Thank you, Jackie. Excellent ideas. We always know that we can trust the teachers to do the research for us. So thank you so much for spending some time with us, Jackie Meyer from Churubusco, Indiana, one of our expert moms right here on Faith and Family. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
Excellent. It is time to talk about Advent ideas, and Amanda's just been waiting. She's one of those teacher moms, too, one of those homeschool moms who does all the research and all the preparations. And every year, I see these pictures and these plans of what's coming up in the Markle household for Advent. And I think I want to go to school at their house because they always cover these really great topics and great material and they do some neat things. So what's in store at the Markle household for Advent? I know you guys do some really neat stuff.
Oh, we have a pretty standard rotation that we do every year. We do a Jesse tree. And of course, every evening we light the candles on the Advent wreath for our evening prayer time. In the last couple of years, we've also added the observance of the Great O Antiphons, which has been a really nice extra kind of thing to do as we wind down each day in the week leading up till Christmas.
So let's break those down. Some of those might be kind of new things for many of us. First of all, you mentioned the Jesse tree. I've heard of it before. I don't know if I've actually seen, I've seen your pictures, but I don't know if I've seen one in person and really know the story behind it.
Well, a Jesse tree is sometimes referred to as Jesus' family tree. It's not a typical family tree in that it doesn't just focus on his ancestors, but the whole story of the plan of salvation from creation until his birth. And so throughout the days of Advent, you read about people like his parents or the prophets of the Old Testament. There's events such as the creation and the flood. Even the angels have a day for reading. And so you focus on one topic every day, and there's a corresponding Bible reading, and then there's a little ornament that you can hang. They can be as simple as you want. It could be a cardboard tree on the wall and paper ornaments, or it could be an actual Christmas tree with fancier ornaments. And so you add one of those every day. And the great thing about the Jesse tree is that instead of being like your traditional Advent calendar that's really just a December countdown, if Advent is longer than 24 days, there are readings for as many days as there can be in Advent. And so you're not sitting there waiting until December 1st to start. You can start on the first day of Advent.
And it's not that there's anything wrong with Advent calendars and chocolates, and we may talk about that later on, but It focuses on the readings for
yes,
the day.
Exactly. It's all about Jesus and how God sent this plan into motion and all the things that happened. You read all of the, the familiar prophecies in the Old Testament that everybody likes to hear at this time of year. And it just really helps you focus and take time to really think about why we celebrate Advent, and not just Christmas, but that whole season of preparation and waiting.
And I like how you pointed out that it could be as simple as you want or as elaborate as you want. It could be, like you said, a cardboard tree on the wall. It could be an artificial tree or a real tree that you use to decorate. Any of those would work. And simple decorations or elaborate decorations, just depending on your abilities and your creativity, I guess.
Ornaments were all, we got them out of a book, and the children colored them, and I had them laminated so that they'd last. And so they're, they're really special to us because the children made them. And you can buy beautiful wooden ones off of Etsy or other, websites. But I there's something special about having the ones that your family made.
Well, certainly, because then there are memories associated with that as well. So when you hang that ornament on the Jesse tree, then you remember the time that you spent together as a family, or even as a child, remember how you made that ornament.
Exactly.
And so there are some memories. I was just thinking not too long ago that some of the smells from the holidays and from seasons and stuff that I remember that always bring back memories, and memories can certainly be good.
Yeah.
That can help us remember some of the important things. So what a great gift your children will carry with them, and hopefully that tradition onto their families as they grow up as well. Okay, so you mentioned Jesse tree, and then let's see, there was a second item, and then antiphons. What was the second? Oh, the Advent wreath.
Advent wreath.
And you said you use that every evening?
Yeah, I know a lot of people light them only on Sundays or Wednesdays, just once a week. We light ours every day, except usually Wednesdays because we're at church on Wednesday evenings. But we'll light the appropriate candles for the week. We say our evening prayers in front of the wreath instead of just upstairs like we normally do. And again, it's just a way to kind of make us stop and really focus, and it's not just another thing to check off on the bedtime routine, but it kind of forces us to really slow down with it.
Do the kids help with lighting the candles?
Kind of. As they're getting older, we trust them a little more. It used to just be, our job to do it. But now that they're getting older, they can help with that.
Sure. Yeah. They can not set fire to the place, but learn the responsibility that comes with it as well. And that's nice, too, because then they look forward to it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned antiphons.
Yes.
Which I know some of our families that have a music background, and knowing the Markle family and Mr. Markle and his music background as well, how important the music during the holidays is to the Markle family. What are the O Antiphons?
Well, the O Antiphons are an extra set of Bible readings in the week leading up till Christmas. So there's just seven of them. And they're all based on the prophecies of the Old Testament, and they also coincide with the verses of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And so on a normal Advent wreath night, we begin by singing the first verse of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel as a family. And then in that week leading up to Christmas, we also add the verse that fits with that prophecy. And they're all based on one of the names given to Jesus in the Old Testament. O Wisdom, O Lord, O Root of Jesse. And the kind of neat thing is if you arrange them from the last one to the first one in an acrostic, they spell out the Latin phrase arrow cross, which means tomorrow I will come. And so when you get to that last day, it's the day before Jesus' birth. And so then you finished it, you know, tomorrow I will come. It's just another neat little reminder.
Wow. It's kind of hidden in there.
It is. And they've been in use for over 1,500 years. I mean, some, I think, monk probably sat down and had some fun, you know, arranging them in the right way so that they would have the biggest impact possible.
That's really fascinating. See, I learn something new every day on here. So did you say you sing them or read them or both?
We read the Bible reading, and then we also sing the verse of O Come, Emmanuel that goes with it.
O Come, Emmanuel. And we talked about that yesterday when we talked about songs of the season, O Come, Emmanuel. So you sing it through the whole season of Advent then?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really cool. Excellent. Now, are the kids, do they enjoy singing?
Oh, yes.
They have to in the Markle household.
Yeah, it's kind of a rule.
Now, how did you come across this? How did you come across the O Antiphons? What even caused you to stumble upon this?
Well, you know, I've been to Vesper services that go through all of the Antiphons. Mm-hmm. And it's just been in the last couple of years, I actually saw it on a Catholic blog where a blogger had ornaments for her Jesse tree that they, you know, they did the Jesse tree in the morning mm-hmm. and then they added the ornament for the O Antiphon in the evening. And so that's what we've started doing too. And it's just, you know, anytime I can find a way for us to really be mm-hmm. intentional about the season, I like adding that in just throughout the day, little, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge thing taking up a lot of time, but just little things here and there.
Sure. And I know it in our churches, we, you know, I'll see the O Antiphons written in, you know, in part of the service, but don't even really quite often think twice about it. But what a neat way to bring that into the home too, and to really bring that Advent message home, that this Christ came into the world for us, took on our human flesh, and not only did he come as a baby in a manger, but Advent is also, as Pastor Wood mentioned earlier on Monday, that Advent also is not only a season to prepare for Christmas, but preparation for the return of Christ as well.
Exactly.
That return that, you know, while his birth in a manger was kind of a rude birth and a rough way to come into the world and take on our human flesh, that's kind of a rude way. It's not going to be such a probably a smooth sailing sort of return. You know, I don't think it's going to be the same way, the way that we've romanticized Christmas. I don't think, even though it's nice and cozy and warm and hot cocoa and all those things, you know, I had my hot cocoa last night. It's it's almost December. I got to have hot cocoa every night. That return of Christ, while it will be a good thing for all believers, it's going to be a more than majestic mm-hmm. thing. And so stuff like this that you're mentioning that helps us step outside of that, the warm and fuzzy picture of Christmas and Christ and see Advent for more than just that, more than just a warm and fuzzy, cozy time of year because it's cold outside and we're going to sit down and have good memories. We're going to have things, we're going to do things as a family that point us to Jesus and Jesus coming into this world for us. With about a minute left, any other ideas from the Markle household or any advice for families as they're thinking about Advent?
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier when you were talking to the folks at CPH about St. Nicholas Day. We try to read about more of those commemoration days during the season of Advent. There's quite a few of them that fall. Ambrose of Milan, Santa Lucia. Even Katie Luther, her commemoration day falls during Advent. And there's just a lot of great stories that you can read and see how God has used people through his church through time and, you know, really emphasize that he uses all kinds of people mm-hmm. to work his plans. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you are or when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at Mary's story in the Magnificat that we talked about on Monday. You know, that it doesn't matter, as you said, yes, where you are. Who you are, God's going to use whoever he chooses, whenever he chooses. And he has certainly done that. And we see that in the stories of Advent, how he
He works when and where he will and how he wants. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for spending some time with us today talking about, being a part of the whole show today. I know that, you know, we got to focus on your ideas during the last half, but thanks so much for spending some time with us, making the trip over to talk about ideas for families during Advent and what we can do to observe that season.
You're welcome.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.